Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and I'm coming to you live from the BB&T Atlanta Open at Atlantic Station in Midtown Atlanta. It is a cloudy day here, and we're hoping the rain holds off for day one of main draw action here at the BB&T. I was hoping to bring you guys some player interviews or parent interviews from the tournament, but with all the rain delays we've had over the weekend and players trying to squeeze in some practice sessions before their main draw matches today, unfortunately, I couldn't get access to anyone. I'm a little bummed because I was looking forward to doing that with y'all. But I am sitting here in the media room, surrounded by other journalists, surrounded by people involved with the tournament. John Isner actually just walked in and chatted with one of the photographers, so that was kind of fun to get to see him. And as I'm sitting here, we have two artists working, painting pictures of oil paint, actually, of some of the players. And I'm staring at a painting of John Isner that they did from last year's tournament. It's actually really cool. But so in lieu of a player interview, I am going to replay a show from one of the other network hosts, Bill Patton. Bill did a show on mental training and focus and dealing with fear and how players learn to manage that. And his interview was just fabulous. I'm hoping to have the folks that he interviewed on the Parenting Aces show at a future date and have actually discussed that with them. And they've agreed to do a show in the future, so I'm looking forward to that. But to give you a taste of what's to come on Parenting Aces, I'm going to go ahead and play this interview from Bill Patton's show with Linda LeClaire and her husband Bryce, and you guys are in for a real treat. I think you're going to learn a lot. Next week we have another great show coming for live for you, and this week, the rest of the week, I will be down at the BB&T volunteering. I have the privilege of working in the booth on the stadium court. I'm the one who does the radar, so when you're watching the tournament on TV and they flash and show you how quick the players are serving, that's me controlling that button, just in case you were wondering. I'm also up there controlling the score and watching each point to log in, forehands, backhands, winners, errors, etc., so that the IBM stats people can compile all that data and report back to you. So it's a pretty cool gig. I've been doing it this is my fourth year, and I'm really looking forward to another fun week down here. We've got some great players on site, and it's going to be fun. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and switch over to Bill Patton's interview, and I hope you guys enjoy. Would love to hear feedback from you. You can always email me at fitmom@bellsouth.net or contact me through parentingaces.com. I've got a big week coming up getting my son ready for his trip, and if you haven't heard about that, take a peek at parentingaces.com, and you'll see what's going on in the Stone House over the next week or so. Anyway, have a great week. Enjoy Bill's interview, and I will talk to you guys live next Monday at noon.
Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about. And the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Infinite Tennis. I'm your host, Bill Patton. Infinite Tennis brings you a tennis convention without leaving home. All we ask is that you take a look at it, share our sponsors, spread the word about the UR Tennis Network. So please take a moment to email, share, tweet the show, all right? Is that a deal? All right, okay, good, deal. It's really amazing how much our guests have to offer into a deeper understanding about how to play the game and also to live happier and healthier. So there's a lot of extra benefit there. Now, while I'm disappointed that our guests have not seen or don't remember the Bill Murray movie, What About Bob?, I'm not going to hold that against them, and I'm delighted to have them on the show, all right? So we're going to have a little word about the financial advantage of moving your club into the 21st century, and then when we get back, we're going to welcome our guests, Dr. Bryce Young and Linda LeClaire, mental game consultants. All right, so here we go.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Okay, welcome back. Hello, Linda and Bryce, are you there?
Yes, hello, Bill. We're glad to be here.
Happy to be here with your listeners, Bill.
Excellent, excellent. And Linda, you broke the rule about no laughing during the intro. I forgot to tell you about that.
Sorry.
There are rules on the show. So try to contain yourself. All right. So how are you
all
going
right,
to do today? How's your life today? Can you hear me all right?
No, I didn't hear that. Again?
Okay. How is your day going so far today?
Oh, it's great. We've been all smiles this morning and laughing a lot, as you can tell. So it's a great day here in Minnesota.
Oh, okay, great. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up? How did you get started with tennis? And what's on the horizon for you? Linda gets to go first because we already decided it's ladies first.
All right, thank you. I grew up here in Minnesota, and I didn't really start playing tennis until I was in my 20s. And I grew up in the era where women were not playing a lot of sports. There were no activities in my school or anything like that. But I had brothers who were playing and who are coaches, and so I was real active at home. And the first chance I got to start playing tennis, I just embraced it and have gone on from there to coaching high school, college, working with pro players, and now into the best area of my life, which is working with the mental, emotional, and spiritual part of the athlete to help them perform at a higher level on the physical level as well.
Wow, that's great. Okay, Bryce?
Well, I was born in the Midwest, and when I was growing up, you basically played the school sports. So you played football in the fall, basketball in the winter. We had track and field and baseball in the summer. So there were four sports, and tennis was not one of those big four. I absolutely was blessed to have a a wonderful teacher retire in the little town of Lindsborg, Kansas, of all places. His name was Kirk Meacham, and he had coached his own son, who played number one at Stanford. And he saw me running around with no strokes, no grips, playing tennis for fun as a fifth sport. And he said, "What's your favorite sport?" And I said, "Baseball right now." And he said, "What do you like about it, Bryce?" And I said, "I like to hit the ball." And Mr. Meacham taught me my first lesson in sports psychology. He said, "How often do you hit it in baseball?" And I said, "Oh, every couple, two or three innings." And Mr. Meacham said, "I've got a sport where you could hit it every other time." So that was a fabulous intro to this sport, which became my life, because once he found out what I liked, he gave me an opportunity to do more of it.
That's great. I like to say 487, and then people say, "What's that?" And that's the average number of times you strike the ball in the average tennis match. So that's a lot better than 12. A lot better than 12 and foul fits. Okay, so Linda and Bryce, I'm going to take you into a light trance and offer you a suggestion. Are you ready?
We're ready.
Okay, never mind. I was just kidding. I was just teasing to see if you were up. that was okay, because you know, sometimes people approach psychologists as being the ones who have all the answers, and they're not open to a new idea. So psychology is scary because you have the person with all the answers who's then going to drill it into your head, right? Okay, so thank you for that. When you pass the test, more seriously, though, this is a question, a very specific question, and it comes from someone who wants to know about fear, and then we'll kind of open it up to a more general discussion about that. This is from our listener, Karma, from Las Vegas, and she wants to know, how can a player handle feelings of not being good enough at a crucial point in the match? So, Linda.
Okay. One of the things that I teach that is just awesome is the information about energy traps. And energy traps are stumbling blocks. They're all based on fear. And one of the energy traps is actually the fear of not being good enough, all right? And we come across lots of athletes who have this fear as their core fear. And the working with the athlete to help them to acknowledge that this is merely fear talking to them, that there is no basis in the fear, that they actually have the ability, helps them to get past the fear. But that's the crucial point, is understanding that it's really fear that we're talking about. So Karma from Las Vegas is in the middle of the match, and she starts going into, "I don't know if I can do this. I'm afraid I'm not good enough to compete or to play at this level." And this is, you know, just such a short answer to this question. But if we can help her to understand that it's fear talking, and get her out of the fear and back into what I call love energy, get her energy flowing again. This very thing is a little bit of what happened to Lisinski in the Wimbledon final, is that she went into fear. It may have been a different fear than the fear of not being good enough, but it was very similar from what I could see. And her energy was very blocked, and she stopped doing the very things that she was doing in the previous matches that kept her energy flowing freely, which were she was smiling, she was having fun, she was in the moment. But when we go into fear and thinking about I'm not good enough, it's going into fear and into the future, it's taking yourself out of the present moment. And so teaching Karma and teaching athletes and people to stay in the moment and to focus on what they have complete control over helps them get through the fear and back into what I call love energy. Now, I know that's a very short answer for what to Karma might seem more complicated, But with a little bit of training, with a little bit more help, it is not that difficult to get through. I can't tell you how many of our clients have this energy trap as their core fear. I mean, some awesome people and great athletes, and you think, how could they possibly ever think this way? But because it is one of the energy traps, a lot of people do have it.
Yes. Now, my experience, I think, is that it exhibits itself more in a close match than in a blowout match. So the way I handle that with my players is, what would you rather have? Would you rather win 6-0, 6-0, lose 6-0, 6-0? Neither of those are too exciting. You don't remember your routine victories. It's tiebreaker in the third. That's what you have to love, is you will remember that match, win or lose. And so that's where the enjoyment of setting it up as, that's where the excitement is. So, all right.
Bill, the one thing about the energy traps is that the closer you get to your goal, the more likely the energy trap is going to be triggered. And that's why that feeling of I'm not good enough, or what people call nervousness or anxiety, comes up. It's not going to come up if everything is, 6-0, 6-0. There's no reason for you to be challenged. It's when you are getting close to your goal that it appears. And when we work with athletes, we let them know. We talk about it ahead of time. Okay, when you get close, you're going to be vulnerable to your energy trap, to these fears coming up. And then we role play and we teach them how to overcome that, or better yet, not to even go into the trap at all.
What do you think of replacing words because of the connotations they hold? So an example would be, I feel nervous. And instead of that, saying to yourself, I feel excited, which has a completely different...
That is, number one thing we talk about with our clients is that nervousness, anxiety, those are all choices, and choices that you make by the words you use. By saying I'm nervous, you're already sending that message to your body, and, really understanding that your body's listening to you at all times. It's taking in, I'm nervous, okay, then your body's going to react in a nervous way. You tighten up or you get all scattered. Depending upon your own personality, your own traps. And so we do teach our clients that before your match, you're going to have an energy shift. Most people call that, I'm nervous. We don't call that. We call that, that's an energy shift. That means your body's getting ready to compete. So what you just said was great, fueling in the information that says, I'm ready. I'm excited. This is exactly where I want to be. And continually letting your body know that it's feeling good, that this energy shift is a good thing, because your body cannot perform at a high level without it. So instead of saying, I'm nervous, we say, I'm feeling great. I'm ready.
Yes. Okay, so Bryce, is there something you'd like to add into all this?
I'm gonna take it from the macro to the micro for karma, and then if we can what we teach quite often on court as well, we don't have people coming to us and lying on a couch. We've got them on the court doing the work that we're teaching them off court. So basically, what I'm doing quite often is saying, okay, when is your mind most active? Well, it's most active not when you're moving and hitting the ball out there, Bill. It's most active the moment the ball goes out of play between the points. And what we do is literally teach them, all right, let's give you a place to focus that allows you to quiet your mind with the goal of having a quiet mind and a fluid body. So if we had to do something as short as a bumper sticker, it would, how do we get a quiet mind and a fluid body so that all those strokes that the Bill Pattons have taught you have an opportunity to come out on the court? And one of the things we teach the students who work with us privately, we have a lot of students this summer who are working with us by phone, on Skype. Linda and I have had appointments all week with players who are playing in their national tournaments around the country, basically reminding them, okay, you've got a focused breathing plan here, and we teach them how we want them to breathe, and that the moment the ball goes out of play, we want them going to their breathing rather than their heads, because when they start getting into that mode, it's like gerbils racing around in your brain, and you either get scattered, to quote Linda, and everything's frantic, or you get stuck on one thing that happened, and you can't move forward. And
right.
I'm literally, Linda,
Bryce, I hope the gerbils aren't hungry while they're in there, because that could be rough.
Yeah.
So, Bill, they get hungrier and hungrier.
I get your point there, and yes, I mean you want to come back to what are you trying to accomplish? What's your central thought? And let all the garbage go, right? So come back to that thing. So I got you on that. All right, let's move it along here a little bit, and we'll zoom back out again for a second. Actually, we're going to go to an ad, and when we come back, then we'll talk about fear in general, and we'll touch on the larger categories of fear that people can do, and then maybe like 20 seconds on what the intervention is for that. So we're going to a commercial. We'll be right back.
Okay.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At ussportcamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit ussportcamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike tennis camps and take your game to the next level.
Okay, welcome back. I think part of the appeal for some people about this show is their guilty pleasure about what's the next weird thing I'm going to say. So I try to appeal to my audience in that way. And all right, so now... I remember those tapes that Joe Dinifer had. You could subscribe to Coach Tennis America, and I love that. And that's where I got my introduction to your work, Linda, on the chief fears of an athlete. And so,
okay,
if you could give us a 1-minute overview on that as we zoom back out to the bigger picture, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Okay. There's 7 core fears that people can have, and I call them energy traps. Arrogance, the fear of being judged, self-deprecation, the fear of not being good enough, martyrdom, the fear of being the victim, impatience, the fear of running out of time or not having enough time, stubbornness, the fear of change, greed, the fear of not having enough, and self-destruction, the fear that life itself is not worth it, is not worth having. And everybody has one and usually 2 of these fears as their core fear. And what's really cool about knowing what is your core fear is that this is the fear that moves you into all of the destruction that happens in our lives. For instance, if you're playing a tennis match and impatience is your major energy trap, you will start rushing your shots. You will start getting impatient on the court, and that'll be the starting point of where you start going downhill. If it's stubbornness, you won't be willing to change something that's not working. Roger Federer, we talk a lot about his stubbornness. I don't think he understands it as a core issue, that it is something that traps him. It's his stumbling block, that in order for him to even grow more or in a match to be able to succeed, he needs to change something. But that fear blocks him from doing it, so he keeps doing the same thing over and over again. So, you're asking me to do in 1 minute something that can take a little bit longer to explain, but I hope that at least introduces the subject, because it's different than if you say, like, there's fear of failure, fear of success. Those are real general-type fears, but these energy traps, these core fears, are what ignite the actual blockage in the energy and the scatteredness that lead to other things that block us from achieving our dreams.
Yes. Okay. So the great thing about this is it's taped and people can go back and reflect on those different ones. But now, can you give us, so Bryce, what do you have something on that to share with us also?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I've written about it in Yes, God Speaks to Women, too. And then I got so many people saying, will you write more about the energy traps? And in my next book, The Confidence Factor, where you get into confidence, I also go into more depth about the energy traps. And this is a great topic. I really got into it even more than you can imagine with my own son, who was having trouble on the court. And as a parent, I was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe he's acting like that out there. And being able to help him, his energy trap, one of them was arrogance. And that comes out pretty ugly on the court when arrogance is in the fear part. And I talked to him about it, and I was able to help him get through that. And one of the rewards of it is when he was playing in the finals of a conference tournament, end of the season, a big deal. He was in the final. He was playing doubles in the finals of this tournament, and they were going. They had match point, and his partner was up. He was serving. His partner was up the net, and his partner just blew the shot came right to him and just hit it at the bottom of the net. And his partner then turns around and asks, Josh to do the same thing the next time. And Josh's first response would have been, no way am I giving you another chance to do that. He would have gone into the arrogance part of him. But because he had learned about this and he knew that his partner's energy trap was self-deprecation, he, instead of going into any judgmental response to his partner, he just smiled at him and said, okay, let's do it. And he served the next point, and his partner came through, and they end up winning the title. And, it was just a great memory. And my son is much older now. He's out of college, and he tells that story about how much that helped him. And as a parent, I think it's hardest to work with your own children, even though this is our area, their expertise. But when it works with your kids, it's just so rewarding, and I like to be able to do that for other parents and, to be able to really give them tools that help them at their core, at their essence, not just, kind of external things and superficial things, but really things that are actually easy to learn and work immediately work.
That's great. So now I know just enough psychology to be dangerous because I did it as an undergrad. And my understanding is that for every negative trait or even for every positive trait, there's a negative side to it. So it can manifest itself positively. So I see stubbornness as sometimes determination. So, I think of Boris Becker stubbornly saying, I'm going to beat Yvonne Lendl from the baseline, and then doing it. I mean, that's, so people said, no, that's stupid. That's you know, you're being really stubborn. That's never going to work. And then he proved himself right. So, you know, sometimes it does come out okay. You just have to look at the results to see whether it's working or not, right?
Well, Bill, Linda, you know, to ask Linda to put two books into 60 seconds is a worthy challenge. And I think she's done
unfair.
Well with it.
It's completely unfair, right? All right.
However, what Linda, you make a good point, Bill, because Linda, in the confidence factor, in Yes, God Speaks to Women Too, explains both the positive and the negative sides of each of the energy traps. And
okay, good.
Clearly, if you view the athlete as energy and information, it's what we send in the way of information that triggers mind to body so that the body can allow everything we've trained in to come out. That's what we're looking for. And so the real key is, are you aware, is your energy stuck? Is it scattered? Is it positive and flowing? And that's what Linda's allowing the athlete to become aware of. Occasionally, an example like somebody going to stubbornness and having a payoff could work. However, if they're aware of the energy traps, they're not going to make it harder than it has to be.
Okay, that's great. Hey, good news and maybe better news. Actually, bad news for me is I just found out that my 9 o'clock lesson is going to be postponed. So we have more time than I thought. And so if you're game, I'm game to go on. We can actually go the full 60 minutes if you like. So we'll just see how that
goes.
Awesome.
That's awesome. We would love to. Bill, you remind me of Coach Bobby Kremins. We have the honor and pleasure of working with him and his basketball teams. And he used to tell me on game day, he said, all right, Linda, I want you to go give the team something really good, and you have 30 seconds to do it.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so shifting gears, I have this premise that I operate under that people who excel at something have a core belief system in place. So I have yet to run into somebody who isn't incredibly successful that doesn't also have a very ironclad underpinning that way. And so I know we've talked a little bit about faith, and I gave Oscar Wagner a little time to talk about Scientology before, and so I was wondering if you want to talk a little bit about what it is, what's your faith underpinning?
All right, I'll go first. My faith is really related to my spiritual side, obviously, and it is such a core part of me. It's something I go through the day with, you know, being in touch with my path, my mission for being here. It touches my work in that when I'm working with somebody, one of the questions that always comes up is what do you think your mission in life is? Why do you think you're here? And it's so rewarding and exciting for me to be talking to maybe a 15-year-old athlete, 15 years, and I can ask that question, and they will oftentimes already have an answer, that they know that there's something bigger than just tennis or whatever sport they're playing, that there's more to why we're here, that we really are here for a reason. And so that connection with the bigger picture, some power that is beyond us, is just totally a part of me. I it's hard to even think of it as something to talk about it, because it would be like breathing. It just is who I am and who I think everyone is, that we're, you know, that spiritual part is really us. And I think it's really important that we know who we are and what our mission in life is, why we're here, because it adds so much joy, so much passion, so much love to our lives.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Bryce, do you have something for us on that too?
Well, any soul or human being on the planet that you ask this to at least has some sense that they're here and they're going through things. And quite often it's a spiritual experience in a human body. And so really what I feel is a sense of gratitude and appreciation that each of us is given an opportunity by being here to keep growing and keep learning lessons and keep sharing. What I ask myself before I'm asked to speak at a USPTA convention or a PTR International symposium, or this year when Linda and I were invited by Tennis Australia for the Australian Open, the real thing is, how can I be of service? How can I help the people who are coming to hear us and see if we can at least inspire them? And along those lines, we spent a good bit of time at the University of Virginia in my doctoral program on motivation, and I came away from all of that study feeling like we don't really motivate other people. A lot of times if you make the mistake on a flight of telling somebody what you do, the rest of the flight they say, oh, good, so you're going in to psych up all these athletes. You're going to go motivate all these people. You're going to get them really amped up. And I said, no. I said, actually, they do that. What we're going to do is see if we can give them an opportunity to quietly call on what's within them. And so I think there's more inspiration and, of course, perspiration than there is motivation.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, for me, I mean, I thank God for the gift of life and for the grace that he's given me. And I pray for these shows because I need lots of help. I need a lot of help because I make a lot of mistakes. But let's shift gears. We're going to get really complicated now. And who knows, this question could end the show. It's quite possible. This could be it. All right, so I gave this to you in text, but I want to read it out to the audience, and so I'm hoping you're well prepared for this already. All right, so there's a young man, and he has a strong ranking, and he has maybe a chance to go pro, but at least he's got a really good shot at playing for a Division I school. He has stated his goals, and his behavior's not quite matching up with what he has said. So the walk's not really matching the talk. He's coming off an injury right around the same time that he's supposed to be preparing for a trip to go to a high-level academy. Also, it sounds like he's not rehabbing the way he ought to. So his mom's a little worried about whether he's going to follow through or not, and she's trying to create the line of communication with coaches and coaxing them to do the upkeep on the accountability, because I think she rightly wants to absolve herself of that responsibility. And then the kid also has some anger issues and is in a peer group that maybe might not be the one you'd want someone who has high goals to be mixing with. Where do you start with this little tangled ball of string? Or do you like paperclip better?
No, I think the tangled ball of string works really well on this one.
Okay.
Bill, I'm going to go ahead and start with where I would work with this student, and also with his mom and coaches, and I'm sure Linda will have a perspective on it as well. First, what I wanted, just as I was inspired listening to you talk a little bit about your faith, which you and Linda and I all share a deep faith and feel that we're here to serve, and we really are here to help each other. With this situation that you're putting out there, first, I think we have to listen to understand. And they're usually when the emotion's involved, we don't listen very well. We charge in because we're panicking a bit, and going back to some of the things you brought up about fear, since we're in fear energy, we tend to be very scattered or very stuck. We're stuck on one piece of that. Now, you know, the old saying, the best way to eat an elephant is a bite at a time. I think that one of the first places we want to start is we want to find out what is this young man's goals? What are your dreams? And I'm going to do that with him by himself, and I'm also going to talk to his mom or his mom and dad, or if it's an extended family, however that works, and say, what are your dreams for this young man? And then we're going to see if there's any connection there or if we have two separate sets of dreams operating. Quite often when behavior is not matching goals, you have to work with an awareness of where each of those are. And so, you know, I'm quoting Steve Smith, who's out in Florida, and he says you have keys of acceptance, and first you have to have awareness, then you move to acceptance, then you move to commitment. Well, all three of those steps are going to work here for us because we have to help this young man realize, okay, you tell me your dreams are D1 tennis, maybe the pros. And Linda and I hear that often, okay? To me, there's a simple equation. Your dreams minus your present experience, where you are when we start working with you, could be rankings, it could be titles earned, it could be what you're doing in your training right now with your pro. Your dreams minus where you are now is your reality. And so I see me being as a mental coach, a positive realist. I'm always looking for the best in everybody who comes to us, the parents, the coaches, the players. But also we have to have a realistic start of, okay, to be a D1 player and to be valued by a coach who's going to want to bring you into that lineup, what are we going to have to do now to move toward your dreams? How do we do that? And with the parents, we have to ask, all right, is there any disconnect between your dreams and your child's dreams? And see if we can get everybody on the same page once again. I'm going to let Linda jump in at this point because there are so many pieces to this one, including the rehab and that sort of thing, that I think we, and also, you know, the anger issue, because we have people ordering from Anger to Athletic Excellence, which is a CD we put out just to raise athletes' awareness of where the anger is coming from so that they say, oh, gosh, that makes sense now. You know, I was just panicking out there. I was just getting mad. You know, I was sending out the words and the racket and the ball abuse and you know, suffering all this stuff and embarrassing everybody around me, but I didn't know why because I didn't know what to do about it.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to interject for a second because when you said realism, that's an area of concern for me. I did some research on at-risk children, and I think this is very pertinent to this because I think people get realistic too early. And so there was a case history study over a long period of time, and I think it's very powerful, is that children ages 4 to 10 need to be extremely dreamy and unrealistic and think that they can be an astronaut or the number one player in the world and whatnot. And that's very healthy. And they found that kids that were realistic or pessimistic at those age, in that age range, were at risk for a lot of negative consequences. And then the next stage was 11 to 13 years old. Then they needed to become realistic during that age, because that's why we have middle school, because they socially compare during that time. If they don't become realistic during that age, then they're not going to be able to start doing the work. And then there's an interesting thing where they have to rebound from that and become optimistic. So I want to emphasize very strongly that parents of very young children ought not to encourage their kids to be overly realistic too early. Any follow-up thoughts on that?
Yes, Bill, I think it's very interesting research. And if our listeners were listening closely to you, you actually bookended what I was saying. I started not with what's your management by objectives, what's your strategic plan here. You know, I didn't put a business model on it at all. I said, not even what are your goals, I said, what are your dreams? Because the dreams are fire. The dreams are what allow each of us to be motivated through all the ups and downs.
Yeah.
And so literally, I put the dreams and the reality out there, and you walked us through the stages. Linda?
That brings up so many things. Just the fact that we never know what individual's purpose or mission in life is, what their soul purpose is, if, you know, to go a little bit deeper, and to limit them or to try to impose our own limitations on a child, to me, is just the worst thing you can do to a child. And I object a little bit to that 11 to 13 age group having to force realism on them, because that's still really young, and things are still really forming within them. I think introducing them to maybe some of the action steps or the side of their dream that they might not be aware of can help, but really encouraging people to follow their dreams, to follow their passion. Who would have guessed, you know, some of the people that have had great success in life? I mean, I'm sure that, you know, years ago, people had no idea that that person was going to achieve that kind of success. When, you know, talking about that first situation you brought up with this young man, what we do when we talk to a client and this young man, it definitely is. It's so important to hear from him what his dream is, what his goal is, and then to go to asking him, what do you think it will take to achieve that dream? What does a person have to do? And really listen to see what he thinks. And then asking him, what are you doing now? What steps are you taking? What are you doing to achieve it? And, of course, there's the disconnect here, and then asking him, well, why aren't you doing those things? What's keeping you from doing what you now have just told me you need to do to achieve the dream? And that's where we get to some of the core issues, some of the fears the person has, fear that maybe he doesn't really think he's good enough to achieve that dream. Mm-hmm. He's injured now. He's got lots of fears. You know, when our body's been injured, it sends a different message to our mind, and we're afraid of being injured again. And especially young people who have felt like they were, you know, so powerful and nothing can, you know, hurt them. Getting an injury is very, it has a strong effect on them, and it really can take some techniques to help remove that fear. I mean, we come up with that so often. Just saying, you know, well, you're healthy, go back and play, you can do whatever, you know, you've done before, it doesn't always work. So
I agree wholeheartedly with that. I mean, I had a fairly minor surgery to my knee, and I found that it took me fully 6 months before I could hit a leaping overhead. Because in the back of my mind, I just had this fear that I wasn't going to be able to do it. And when I finally was able to do that, I mean, it took 6 months. And when I was able to finally do that, then it really felt like a relief. I was so happy at that moment, and my confidence went up. But I had to go through that 6 month period there. So, okay.
Bill, there's actually energy tech that we use with our clients, that you can go through that in 15, 20 minutes.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
And that would be a whole nother program. I mean, it's so exciting.
Yeah.
Recently I had a client who had a wrist injury, and her backhand, she had changed her backhand to accommodate the injury, but it wasn't, you know, what she wanted. So we did these energy techniques. She's back to her old backhand, and it's better than ever. A basketball player who had an injury, was out for a year, was afraid to charge the basket because he didn't want to get re-injured. We did these techniques. The next game, he's like back to the old player that he had been. And coaches are like, wow, you know, we thought he was being lazy. And it wasn't that. He was afraid. So
let's try to shift gears here. I get your point fully, and I really appreciate that. I think that there's a strong likelihood that this person who's asked this question is going to contact you, and so I think we can leave that. And don't be surprised if you don't get a call later today on that.
All right.
So,
good.
Because it's a pressing issue, and, you know, I wanted to, you know, get your take on that for my friend. And okay, so let's shift gears here a little bit, and we're gonna talk about the use of radar, because this question is sponsored by Pocket Radar, and that's my new sponsor. So yesterday I got my radar gun out, and the kids, of course, love it. But then, you know, I became a mom who had to try to get the kids out of the pool. You know, one more. So then I had to get mean. And but let's talk about what's great psychologically about radar, and where can that be something where it turns into an energy trap? Because I want people to know what a great tool it is, but I also want them to avoid pitfalls. So what do you think about that?
Bill, how are you using your radar equipment? Were you timing serves? Give us some specifics. We weren't with you yesterday.
Well, here's the situation. So I got the kids together, and we made sure that we warmed up our serves properly. I did not tell them I had a radar gun, and I made sure that we warmed up our serves for a good 15 minutes, because I knew that if you get a 15-year-old and you have a radar gun, he's going to tear his labrum, like, right now. So we're not going to do that, you know. So we got the kids together and got them on the court and had them hit their serves. And, you know, they got to try two at a time. And then, of course, everybody got really tight. And they were mad that they weren't hitting 130-mile-an-hour serves. But it brought them into reality. So,
okay. Thank you for that. As I said, Linda and I listened to understand, and I didn't want to jump in on something that I wasn't present for. In terms of using radar, where I think it could be very valuable would be in terms of some private lessons where you're working on some things to allow the athlete to relax. You know, the biomechanics, we were at the Australian Open with Dr. Bruce Elliott, who's one of the world experts on biomechanics, and we were watching players down on the labor court in High Sense Arena hitting serves and looking at where the kinetic chain was, where they were getting more miles per hour on their serve. My point being that I don't really like the use of radar as it's used at tournaments where we have people running through lines seeing who can crank the biggest serve, and then we have all the weekend warriors injured and they're out for the season. They can't play USTA tennis anymore.
Right.
What I do like is being able to use the radar with the individual to say, here's what you're doing now, and here's actual, you know, here's an actual feedback for you so you know what that does. Now let's say we relax a little bit more and we use some kinetic chain here. We get a little more rotation coming out of that shoulder up past the ball, and we're using a really nice wrist snap here. Wow, we added 10 miles per hour on that serve. And right there, you know, there's a lot of motivation to go home between lessons and practice that new service motion or that little addition you've made during the lesson.
Yeah, I like that because one thing that makes me feel sort of powerless is when I know for certain my eyes tell me that that serve is faster, but I don't know how much. And and I can't conclusively tell my student, yes, you are hitting it 10 miles an hour faster because I can't measure it with my eyes. But to be able to say it's 7 miles an hour faster or it's 12 miles an hour faster, then it's really quantified. So now what would you say, what could be the pitfalls of using it or overusing it, or where would that get into kind of energy trap or problem?
Well, I'll let Linda respond on the energy traps because she's writing the books on it. But I think the other side of it is I don't really like using radar for comparison of students, you know, group situations, that sort of thing, because I think people will do anything simply to try to get more miles per hour, and they may be doing things that are going to hurt them physically and cause injuries later. So I think that would be a downside.
Yeah,
that's a great point. Yeah. Okay,
yeah,
Linda?
Anytime, and speaking of it energetically, anytime we start comparing ourselves to others, we lose energy. And so, you know, I think instruction beforehand is important, that it's not something we're comparing, you know, my serve to somebody else's serve. This is all about just me and what I'm doing and how this is helping me as feedback only. It's not meant to compare me to somebody else's serve, that either I'm better than them or they are better than me, because that's one of the things that we want to avoid doing in our lives is comparing ourselves to others. We're here to do our thing, and the more we can stay in tune with that and be happy for what other people are doing and their thing, the better off we are.
Yes. Okay, great. So now we made it through all that, and I think maybe we've got one more question here. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the USTA mandate with transition balls and 10 and under and 12 and under tennis. And, you know, I really want to focus on fostering the excellence of the top 1% most gifted athletes. So when it comes to that, because I think it would be a grave mistake to kind of chop the head off the whole group of players, what kind of things are most important to fostering that excellence among our most gifted up-and-coming players?
Well, quickly, I think first giving them an awareness of who they are, where their game is, what it's going to take to get where they want to go to reach their dreams. I think a real key area, and maybe on a future show we'll talk about this, Bill, but to me, developing resiliency is just so crucial. It's a marathon, it's not a sprint. And we keep helping all these juniors who come to us and work with us privately and their families and their coaches with, look, this is a marathon, and there's going to be no straight up. We would like to have a more gradual increase in your ability and what you're doing without so many of the roller coaster emotions that go on based on tournament to tournament. My ranking went up, my ranking went down, that sort of thing. But more, all right, what am I adding? What do I need here?